Good morning.
We are blessed to have a beautiful day to see the sun and the blue skies, and finally, after 7 days of rain, we get to enjoy a beautiful day. Our text this morning is from 1 Samuel chapter 16, verses 1 to 14. And I've entertained a couple of titles for this one. I thought it would be entitled Heart of Gold. It's a heart just like God's. And the second one was After God's Heart. And the third one was Touch My Heart into Gold, something like that. And then finally, Cyril did this title, Heart Checkup. So I hope that this will bring us to what the text will tell us this morning. 1 Samuel chapter 16, verses 1 to 14. I'm going to read this to us, and then we'll talk about this. Now the Lord said to Samuel, "How long will you mourn for Saul, seeing I have rejected him from reigning over Israel? Fill your horn with oil and go. I am sending you to Jesse the Bethlehemite, for I have provided for myself a king among his sons." And Samuel said, "How can I go? If Saul hears it, he will definitely kill me." But the Lord said, "Take a heifer with you and say, 'I have come to sacrifice to the Lord.' Then invite Jesse to the sacrifice, and I will show you what you shall do, and you shall anoint for me the one that I have chosen." Verse 4 said, "So Samuel did what the Lord said, and went to Bethlehem, and the elders of the town trembled at his coming and said, 'Do you come in peace?' Samuel said, 'Peaceably I have come to the sacrifice, to sacrifice to the Lord. Sanctify yourselves and come with me to the sacrifice.' Then he consecrated Jesse and his sons and invited them to the sacrifice. So it was when they came that Samuel looked at Eliab and said, 'Surely the Lord's anointed is before him. Surely this is the anointed one of God.' But the Lord said to Samuel, 'Do not look at his appearance or at his physical stature, because I have refused him. I have rejected him. For the Lord does not see as a man sees. For man looks at the outward appearance, but the Lord looks at the heart.' So Jesse called Abinadab and made him pass before Samuel. And he said, 'Neither has the Lord chosen this one.' Then Jesse made Shammah pass by, and he said, 'Neither has the Lord chosen this one.' Thus Jesse made seven of his sons pass before Samuel, and Samuel said to Jesse, 'The Lord has not chosen these seven children of yours has not chosen.' Then he said, 'There remains.' And Samuel said to Jesse, 'Are all the young men here?' Then Jesse said to Samuel, 'There remains yet the youngest, and there he is keeping the sheep.' And Samuel said to Jesse, 'Send and bring him in, for we will not sit down till David comes here.' So he sent and brought him in. Now he was ruddy," meaning he had reddish cheeks, "with bright eyes and good looking. And the Lord said, 'Arise, anoint him, for this is the one.' Then Samuel took the horn of oil, anointed him in the midst of his brothers, and the Spirit of the Lord came upon David from that day forward. So Samuel arose and went to Ramah." Samuel is the last prophet of Israel, but also he was kind of in the middle between a prophet and also a king. Judges reigned for 400 years after the Israelite nation got out of Egypt. They were under captivity for 4 years. For 400 years, they got out and they were ruled by judges. And so Samuel was the last judge that also served almost like a king to Israel. And it came a time for Israel, it seems like they got used to judges and they kind of want to move forward, and they asked God to have a king. So they cried out to God and to Samuel, give us a king just like our neighbors. And the first one that they chose was Saul, because Saul was this handsome guy. He was taller. He was probably 6'8 or 6'5. If you have seen Adrian, probably like similar to Adrian, but much, sturdier. And so when they chose Saul as the king, Saul, Samuel said, you will have a king, but you will have also some sort of payment to this king. He will take your sons and he will take your daughters and he will take part of your land, of your vineyard, of your income. He will take part of your sheep. And they still said, we still want a king. And so they got a king. But Samuel realized that Saul, the first king of Israel, was not somebody that God wanted to rule Israel, because his heart was not right with God. At first, he was very humble. He kind of hid when they were trying to anoint Saul to become king of Israel. He hid among the people somewhere in the pile of the people. And then recognized that he was going to be made king. And so he stood up when Samuel called Saul. But as he continued to reign Israel, he became more problematic in a way that he thought that his power is more authoritative than the priest. And so his heart became callous. His heart became not right in God's eyes. And so God wanted to set another king in place or next in line to Saul. And so this is where the story comes in of Samuel looking for the next king in line. Not from the same tribe, not from the same house, because Saul, the king, first king of Israel, was from the tribe of Benjamin. David, on the other hand, is from the tribe of Judah. That's where Jesus' tribe will come from. So our text this morning, our memory verse this morning, came from this verse. The Lord said to Samuel, do not consider his appearance or his sight, for I have rejected him. The Lord does not look at the things people look at. People look at the outward appearance, but the Lord looks at the heart. And you probably have heard this text a couple of times about God not looking into our outside appearance, but intently looking into our heart. Does God talk about the organ, our heart? Is he looking at the organ that pumps blood into our veins and supplies oxygen into our body and carries nutrients into all our system? Is that what God looks at? Is he looking intently at the pumping of blood of the heart by the heart? I have a 3D printed heart that John Lewis made for me. And this heart is a very small heart. And some said, and I believe them, that our heart is based on the size, usually of our fist. So if you have a big fist, you probably have a big heart and you're a good person. But if you have a small fist, that means that you have a small heart as well. But God is God looking at the organ when he said, people look at the outer appearance, but the Lord looks at the heart. Is he looking at this? Is he looking at the organ? In the ancient Near East, their understanding is that the heart is the seat of the emotion, the seat of the will, the seat of, it's almost like the brain. They thought that the heart was the brain. Especially the ancient Egyptians, they thought that the heart is the center of man. And so whenever they mummify any person, they take out everything else. They suck out the brain through the nose and they take out the guts, but they make that heart stay there. They don't touch the heart because they thought that the heart is the most special part of the human being. So this is the understanding of the ancient Near East. And so they keep it intact. They don't touch it. They leave it there and they mummify it with the body. And so the understanding from the Bible is that the heart is the center of our being. It's the deepest part of our soul. It's this control center of our soul. It's not that God doesn't know that a heart pumps blood. It's not that God doesn't know the intricacies of our human being, of our physicality, the anatomy of our body. God knows, but God uses the language of human being to communicate to us what we already know. Because he's going to say to these old people in the Old Testament that the brain is the center, the command center of human beings. They would be like, what? they would not understand it. Like, for example, if Paul would write something about the missiles to the book of, to the readers in Galatians and also Colossians, they would not understand about missiles or the AK-47 or the AR-15 because they don't have those kinds of things. So God uses the language of the people to communicate what people already know. And because people already know that the heart is the center of the human being, God uses that. And so he said, God looks at the deepest part of the person and checks what's in there. And so Samuel called Jesse, and Jesse called his seven sons. And the odd thing about this is that all the sons of Jesse are gathered together, but David was not part of the group. He was somewhere in the field tending to his flock, to his family's flock. It's kind of odd. Some would suggest that probably David was just a half-brother. That's why he was not among the crowds of his brothers, probably. But as Samuel looked at the first son, Eliab, he realized that Eliab has this authoritative figure in him because he's the first son. He is a hardworking person. He has these muscles in his body. He has this authority that commands his brothers to do what he wants them to do, and they do it for him. And so Samuel looked at this guy and thought, this is the one. This is the next king of Israel. And he was about to pour that oil on Eliab. And God said, oops, God does not look at the physical appearance, but he looks at the heart. And then the second one comes in, Abinadab. And Abinadab is this Mr. Fashionista. He had this long robe and he looked good. And so Samuel thought, this is probably the next king in line because he's going to attract more people because he is a good-looking guy. And God said, oops, God doesn't look at the outside appearance, but he looks at the heart. So if it's not Eliab, it's not Abinadab, then probably the third one, Shammah. Shammah is this mild, gentle person, so probably he is going to be the next king of Israel because he's going to gather all the people of Israel and the Israelites will follow him. But then God said, not that one either. And then son number four came into the picture and God said, not that one either. Then son number five came into the picture and God said, not that one either. Son number six came into the picture and God said, not that one either. And so probably Samuel at this point was scratching his head like, God, who's the next king? I thought, I checked my GPS and I'm here, the right location. It's Jesse's house. This is the tribe of Judah. And this is Bethlehem. But these are all the kids of Jesse. And so finally, Samuel asked Jesse, do you still have a son that your wife doesn't know of? And he said, no, I've just made that up. It's not in the Bible. And so Jesse said, yeah, actually I have the youngest son is tending to our flock. And Samuel said, we are not going to sit down until that young boy gets here. I don't know how far that field was, probably a mile away, probably 2 miles away. So they stood there, Jesse and the seven sons of Jesse and Samuel stood there while they were waiting for this young boy. For this boy that we don't know of. And I don't know if there was a messenger that ran from Jesse's house to the field to fetch David. But as they were approaching, as David and this probably messenger was approaching Samuel, Samuel looked at this boy and he thought, this is a kid. This is just a child. How is he supposed to be a king? This is going to be the next king of Israel, a teenager. It's like there's no way. There's an interesting part about this story. Because you already know that God doesn't look at the physical appearance. He looks at the heart. But here's an interesting part of this story. Verse 12 of chapter 16, it said, 1 Samuel. So he sent and brought him in. Now he arise. Now he was ruddy, like his cheeks were reddish, and his eyes were bright, probably blue-eyed, I don't know, and good-looking. God, I thought you said that you don't look at the physical appearance, but here is this teenager, still blooming with life, full of energy. His cheeks were red, his eyes are bright, he's good-looking, he's handsome. Possibly this is not This is not going to be the next king because he is handsome. You are looking for the ugly one of Israel, right? You don't look at the outside appearance, you look at the heart. This is not the kid because he is too handsome. He is too handsome. Isn't it interesting? Solomon asked for wisdom. He didn't ask for money, but God gave him wealth anyway. David, God looks at the heart, but David is a good-looking guy anyway. Isn't it interesting to you that God tells us something or one thing, but then he ended up being the same thing? He said in Matthew chapter 6 that all these things will be added to you. You look for these things, right? You look for these material things and you want them. You wish for them. You hope that you can enjoy them. And he said, seek the kingdom first and all these things will be given to you. Isn't it odd to you that it seems like God's concern is on the deeper part of a person, the spirituality things, but he still is not giving up on blessing us with the looks, with the material things, with the wealth and the wisdom. Isn't it interesting to you? I think this is one of the, this is a side point, by the way, up to this whole story. It's a side point. I think this is a testament that God really is a God that wants to bless his people. He looks at the heart, but still is concerned about the physical appearance. But of course, what matters to him most is the heart. So Samuel blessed and anointed David, and he became the next king in line. So what is with David's heart and Saul's heart? Because God wanted to replace Saul, and he wanted David to be the next king in line. Well, Saul's heart was very prideful and arrogant. What I told you, at one point he thought that the priest was very slow in his service, and so he asked the priest, step down, let me do the burning of the sacrifice, I'll do this myself. That is almost like you saying, is this a minister? This doesn't look like a minister of God. I probably should do his job. This doesn't look like the worker of God. I probably should take his job. This probably sounds like some of you who are not content with the minister's work. Oh, that minister is kind of lazy. Let me replace his job. And so Saul here was very arrogant in his heart, and he was not content with how the priest was serving. And so he said, step down from the altar. Let me do the burning of the offering to God. And God was not really pleased with that. God saw that as some sort of arrogance. Another example is that at one point when he was chasing Saul, King Saul was chasing his enemies, he thought that his armies and his people should not eat until he defeats all of his enemies. And so his people were starving because they could not touch the honey, they could not touch the water, they could not smell any food, and so they were starving. And so his harshness was not pleasing to God. He has this arrogance in himself that he has to be victorious every single time. Another example is when he asked for a witch to talk to Samuel, because at that point Samuel was dead. And he wanted to listen to God. But there was no way for him to listen to God because Samuel was already dead. And so he sought the help of the witch. And God was not really pleased with that as well. So Saul's heart was arrogant and prideful. David's heart, by the way, is very different. David's heart is very humble. When David saw that this Goliath was marching towards the army of Israelites and was putting the name of God in shame, he said, who is this uncircumcised person that's going to put the name of the living God in vain? Let me go after him. Another example is that when Saul was purchasing him, was pursuing him, and he had a chance to strike down Saul, instead of striking down Saul, he said, I'm not going to touch Saul because God anointed him as king, and I'll let God deal with him. So what he did was just cut a portion of Saul's cloak. Another instance is when he crawled to Saul's camp, and he took Saul's spear and also his water jug, but instead of killing Saul, he just took these things, and as his prize, and then shouted to Saul, "Saul, are these things not yours? I could have killed you, but I spared your life." He was very humble. When he sinned, when he committed adultery, and also plotted to murder Uriah, and he was disciplined by Nathan, he was very repentant. He didn't defend himself. He didn't make up excuses. Psalm chapter 51 tells us what kind of heart Saul David has. And he said, "Create in me a clean heart, O God." And he was crying to God. He was bawling like a kid because he wanted God to forgive him for that mistake. I'm going to read part of this text in Psalm chapter 51. He said, verse 1, "Have mercy upon me, O God, according to your loving kindness, according to the multitude of your tender mercies. Blot out my transgressions, wash me thoroughly from my iniquity, and cleanse me from my sin. Purge me, create in me a clean heart, restore me, deliver me from my guilt of from the guilt of bloodshed." This tells you about what kind of heart David had. A very repentant, humble heart. He was not arrogant. And so when God looked at David, he looked a heart that is very similar to his. And so that's one of the reasons why in Acts he was called David as a man that I found after my own heart. David is the only man that is after God's own heart. When God looks at our heart today, of course not the organ, we already talked about that. What does he see? When he looks down into our innermost being, the center of our self, the center of our emotion, the center of our will, the center of our love, the center of our desire, what does he see? Does he see a heart that beats just like his? Does he see an arrogant heart, a prideful heart, or a humble heart and repentant heart? Does he see himself in that heart? Because when he looked at David, God saw his heart. A heart that beats like his. A heart that loves the poor. A heart that is merciful. A heart that loves justice. A heart that is for God. A heart that dies for God. A heart that is controlled by God. That's what God saw. And he said, "This is the one." What does he see? Jeremiah chapter 17 verse 10 says that God looks at our heart. And when he looks at our heart, he's looking for something. And I have no doubt that God is in your heart, that he is residing there, that he is living there. Because I can see it, I can feel it. I can feel your goodness, I can feel your love. I'm talking about you. I have no doubt that God is in your heart because you are generous people. You are a peace-loving people. You exude this goodness that is irresistible. And you are lovable. You're good people. So I have no doubt that God resides in your heart. So the question for us is not whether God resides in our heart or not. The question for us is different. Because I believe that God resides in your heart. He's there. But the question for us is a little deeper this morning. When God resides in your heart, is he living on the couch? Does he have access to your master's bedroom? Or he's living on the guest bedroom? Do you let him open your closet so that he can see all the flaws there and the secrets? Or you keep it locked? And you said, "God, I know that you're a resident of my heart, but you only have this. You can do whatever you want, but you only have these four corners here. The couch, the refrigerator. You can have the remote control to the TV. But don't touch my closet. Don't enter my bedroom. So God is living in our heart, but does He have full access to our heart? Does He have full access to our heart? Because Jeremiah tells us that He intently looks at the heart, and He is looking for something. And I think what He's looking for is His full residence, not just the couch, not just the spare bedroom, not just the comfort room. He wants the whole house. And we can see from the story of David that David did allow God to have full control of his life. He didn't kill Saul. He could have taken Saul many, many times and taken the throne. He could have showcased his prowess as a warrior, but he didn't do that. He could have taken like 20% of tax from the people, but he didn't do that. He was one of the best kings of Israel because he only imposed a certain amount of tax, and it wasn't too much for his people. He always showed mercy and justice of God. So the question for us this morning is, because He's in your heart already, does He have full control of your heart? But what does that look like? What does full control and residence of God in a heart looks like? It looks like this. That means that your emotion, your will, your desire is all about God. When you do something, you don't just jump into these things and forget about God's thoughts or will or forget about His vote or input. Friday night, my wife and I, we borrowed a John's trailer, Janico's trailer, and we picked up a couple of things from Ashley Furniture Store. And then my wife went in there, and we have been thinking about buying a formal dining table because we don't have one. And so she went in there with her mom, of course, the loving mother, my mother-in-law, and doing all the suggestions about to pick this kind of table that looks like probably would fit more of Brittany and Galen's house because it's a farm-like table. And we wanted a dining table, and she had other thoughts. And so as me and my father-in-law pulled the things that we got from that store, and I went in because I wanted to have some vote, I said, probably not that one because that doesn't look like a formal dining table. Probably not that one because that doesn't look like a formal dining table. We went to this good-looking formal dining table, and I said, I think this one right here. I finally got my vote. So does God, does God have a vote to our decisions? Does God have a vote to the way we handle our money? Does God have a vote to the way that we react to others? Because He's already in our heart. But how much vote does He have? How much influence does He have in our actions, in our will, in the way we do things, in the way that we do life, in the way that you pick, if you're a teenager here, in the way that you pick your spouse or your fiance? Does God have a vote to that? I can tell you a story about me and my wife, but it's going to, that's probably another 30 minutes. Does God have a vote to that? The way that you pick, your farm, the way that you pick your house, does God have a vote to that? The way that you pick your congregation, does have a vote to that? So I think the story for us here can be twofold. One is not to judge the book by its cover, which is, a side point. But the second point that I think is important for us this morning is that if God does have a residence in your heart, let Him have a full access to your heart. Because He wants a person that reflects just like His. He wants a heart that beats just like His. He wants you to be His. And you really can't become His if you are still of your own. If you're still about yourself, you can't really be God's. And so, the message this morning about the story of David tells us to allow God to have full control of our heart. Because He wants, whenever He looks at our heart, He wants to see His heart. He wants to see how loving we are to each other, how caring we are to each other. He wants to see how we are merciful to each other, how we show grace to each other. For some reason, this is why we have this right here. Loving God and loving others. That's how God's heart beats. We love God, we love others. And loving God is through loving others. That's how God's heart beats. I will close this with one text from Proverbs chapter 23, verse 26, which says, "My son, give me your heart and let your eyes delight in my ways." He doesn't want 80% of your heart. He wants full control of your heart. When He has full control of your heart, you will begin to delight in His ways. And Sunday morning will not be burdensome to you. You will shout like David and say, "I am rejoicing that we are going to worship this morning." And following God's laws will not be a burden to you, but you will find joy in obeying His commands. And loving others will not be a burden to you, because you will find it easy to love others. And giving part of your money to the cause of Christ will not be too much for you, because you are beginning to love just like God. And forgiving others would not be so hard for you, because you become just as forgiving as God. He wants full control of your heart. He's already there. But give Him access to your master bedroom and also to your closet. If there's anybody here that would like to be prayed over, you are very welcome to come forward as we have our invitation song.